Welcome to Focus on the Upstate, a program dedicated to informing you about organizations that serve our community and how you can get involved with them. Here's your host, Chris Evans.
Good morning and welcome to Focus on the Upstate, a pre-recorded production of Entercom Communications. My name is Chris Evans and this is episode 9 of the COVID Chronicles. My guest today is somebody who has been here before, Dr. Saria Sicosio, Ambulatory Chief Medical Officer at Prisma Health. Welcome back, Doctor.
Great. It's great to be on the line today.
Well, thank you very much for being here. And we, the astute listeners, will recognize that you were my very first guest on this program when we first started doing this, I guess, 2 months ago now. And we began talking about how we got to where we were, again, 2 months ago, back in the middle of March, how we got to the situation where we were now starting to shut things down and send people home, you know, work from home orders, schools had been closed, things like that. And I do not that this is necessarily the end of the COVID Chronicles. We may still be doing this for a while yet, but I do want to take the opportunity to sort of loop back around and talk about where we are now and where we were then. Because we've seen lots and lots of changes over the past couple of months, and it just even over the past couple of weeks, the state of Georgia has reopened effectively and has been garnering traffic from South Carolina. A lot of people from South Carolina have been going to the state of Georgia in search of restaurants to eat at, you know, in search of hair salons or nail salons to kind of regain that sense of normalcy that we lost when everything shut down.
Right, that's right. And now that we have our own restaurants opening in South Carolina, and there's more outdoor seating, there's some indoor seating at this point, we all need to remember what has not changed. What has not changed is there is still COVID-19 virus in the air and in the environment. So we need to be safe still with our practices. And in fact, it is even more important today as our businesses reopen and we begin to see those crowds that we remember our simple rules for social distancing and wearing masks.
And not just that, but the things that we've talked about along, washing your hands, making sure that that things are clean when you touch them. Have we learned anything new about how COVID-19 is transmitted? I mean, there's the obvious things that you mentioned, social distancing, wearing a mask, touching your face, things like that. But there's been some nuances that we've discovered over the past few weeks about how things actually progress with this pandemic.
Yes, that's right. And what we have learned and continue to learn is how the virus is spread. And we've talked about this before on previous chronicles, is that droplets is the way COVID-19 spreads to one to another. Those respiratory droplets, either through sneezing or coughing or even singing. We've heard of some cases where there has been spread throughout choirs because of the singing and the number of virus particles that come up through the lungs and out through the mouth and into the crowd.
Wow.
So that's what's new. We're getting better and more concise information about particles and how viral particles spread for COVID-19 versus others. And so just to give you an example of what we see, it's from a cough, you release about 3,000 droplets into the air compared to a sneeze that is 30,000 droplets.
Wow.
And even breathing, again, just to give you something that you may not even realize whether you're spitting or not, 50 to 5,000 droplets can be transmitted in the air just by breathing.
Well, and you're talking, I presume, about microscopic droplets. It's one thing to be in the middle of a conversation and have that embarrassing moment where something visible comes out of your mouth. I know that's happened to me before, and you have to apologize to somebody for accidentally spinning on them. I also have done a fair amount of stage work, and when you are on stage projecting, it is not uncommon to have those sorts of visible droplets coming out of your mouth just because of the work that you're doing as an actor. But it's also droplets that you can't see, things that you wouldn't even notice would ever leave your body.
That is so true. And while we still recognize that those who are symptomatic can be highly infectious, what we have learned and what the data is showing us is 44% of COVID-19 cases are spread by those who are asymptomatic, people who are not having the fever or the sore throat or a cough or other symptoms. And so those are individuals that will be in our communities attending the same restaurants and in other areas. So that's why we can do this safely, and we can do this with social distancing and masks. But that's why it's so important, is even half of the cases, people don't even know when they're spreading the virus.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned some of the primary symptoms, and we've known about those for a while. Indeed, we talked about them, I believe, the first time you were on the program several weeks ago, about, like you mentioned, the cough, the fever, trouble breathing, things like that. But again, I gather that as we have learned more and more about this disease, we're discovering some, I guess you could call them secondary symptoms. I'm not sure what you as a doctor would call them, but things that don't necessarily crop up even with the symptomatic people. But that are being discovered to be associated, or at least presumed to be associated, with COVID-19. I don't know if you've heard of the term COVID toes, but I just learned about this last week, and apparently there's some sort of complication with blood flow that can occur in the extremities, and people's toes are turning purple.
Yes, correct. And it is unfortunate. We're seeing some of these complications and are learning more about these. And unfortunately, in some cases, people have had to have limbs amputated.
Really?
We're now learning and seeing that the pediatric population, so children, are experiencing inflammatory syndromes, and they're presenting much like Kawasaki disease, which is a condition where children may experience red eyes. They may have impacts to their coronary vessels or their heart vessels. So we're learning a whole lot. We need to keep people safe. We also have noticed that CDC has made recommendations and updated their guidelines that additional symptoms may be loss of smell or taste,
myalgias
or aches. Yes, aches and pains or headaches can be your first sign of the virus. So again, being very aware of that information is important, and getting tested if you do feel that you have these symptoms.
Well, and you mentioned headaches, and I had heard talk about people wearing masks and experiencing more headaches with the masks. We mentioned places opening up, and yet we're also seeing places that are getting more restrictive. For example, Costco was the first kind of store that people would visit on a regular basis that decided you have to be wearing a mask to come inside the store. And that seems to be going in the opposite direction of some of the states that are reopening now.
Yes, so that has certainly been a challenge for our communities and as we reopen businesses. And here's what I think, Chris. I think it's so very important to keep our businesses open as much as possible to ensure that people have jobs. And in order for us to be able to do this and do this safely and for them to continue to get that business is of keeping people healthy so that they can continue to go to these businesses. So I support what we're seeing from our Sam's and our Costco's and other store lines that are requesting and requiring that people wear masks. It's for the protection of their workers so they can keep working, and also for those in the community that are coming into their stores. So it's not meant to be restrictive, but again, to keep people safe. I think that's really important, and it's a struggle. And it's also important to recognize if you are out and you choose not to wear a mask, we respect that choice. We do live in this free country here. At the same time, when others are choosing to wear masks, it's important to support that behavior. And what we don't know is perhaps that's someone who's at incredibly high risk, or perhaps they're a healthcare worker and they want to keep patients safe when they're in hospitals. Maybe they're a caregiver for their parents, their grandparents, mm-hmm. or others who may be at risk, or someone perhaps who's experiencing cancer and has a suppressed immune system, but is obligated to continue to go to the grocery store and get those essential needs taken care of.
And let's talk a little bit more about the masks. Who is it that should be wearing? I mean, obviously, if you're going to one of these establishments that has a requirement, everybody who walks through the door needs to be wearing a mask. But when you're out and about, are there people that are more susceptible? Who really ought to be wearing the masks, and who can get away with not wearing them?
Well, absolutely. And first, I want to start with Prisma Health. We believe it is critical to keep everyone safe. And for that reason, we have a universal masking policy.
Okay.
In order to come into one of our facilities, we require both patients and visitors, and including our team members, to wear masks at all times when we're in these shared spaces. Again, that is for everyone's protection. I think that's something that we must remember as we go forward. And we'll see other people recommending to wear masks. What I will share with you is that the CDC has been very direct about the recommendation that everyone wear a mask when they leave their homes and when they're around other individuals. But some places where you might not need it is in your personal vehicle. If you're the only person in the car, there's no sense or need to wear that mask. However, once you get out of that car and perhaps you're entering that grocery store or that sporting goods store, put that mask back on. You mentioned the headaches that people are having.
Right.
They may be experiencing this if they tied the mask too tight. You certainly want it to be fitted. That's important, but it doesn't need to cut off your circulation.
Well, and I've noticed that because I recently started wearing a mask, again, to go to places like Costco, that when I put the mask on, I was more prone to cough because it's trapping more of that exhaled air and making it harder to breathe.
Well, and that's a good point. We also recognize with these masks, there may be certain smells that can trigger some coughing or sneezing for some individuals. But that's very important to keep those particles to yourself and those respiratory droplets. We've had conversations with children and who at the pediatric age should be wearing masks. And we recommend that infants do not, especially 2 months or less, because we don't want them to be limited in their breathing capability. It should not be cutting off your ability to breathe. It's intended to keep people safe.
Well, and there's also been some conflicting information, at least superficially conflicting information, about the efficacy of these masks. I remember hearing just earlier today a study reported that, kind of like you said, that trapping those microscopic droplets is the main reason for wearing the mask and preventing the spread of the virus, and that's what the study had found, is that the masks are very effective for that kind of thing. But then there was an interview with a doctor that said, you know, some people aren't washing their masks, or they're not wearing their masks properly. Let's talk a little bit about the proper use of masks to make sure that they are as effective as possible.
Yes, so that is a challenge. And because the CDC has come out to recommend everyone wear masks, however, in the public, they're recommending cloth face coverings. And that's to preserve the supply for those surgical masks and N95s for healthcare workers or others that are in high-risk environments. That has led us to this challenge where, well, what works? Is it a T-shirt? Is it a bandana? What's most important? And at cdc.gov, on their webpage, they give recommendations of how you can create your own mask from a T-shirt or from a bandana. And they walk you through the steps to create the safest modeling of these cloth face coverings. And what is important is that it is multi-layered, because that helps catch some of these respiratory droplets. They also encourage you to wash it frequently. Now, we know the more that you wash the material, the greater risk that respiratory droplets can slip through. So replacing those masks
just wears
after
out.
Several washes is important.
And it probably goes without saying that you should not try and wash disposable masks. You should just dispose of them, because that's the whole point.
Absolutely. That is correct. If you're wearing a paper mask, I strongly recommend you don't put it in your washing machine, because you'll be picking lint off of your clothes as well for many cycles to come.
I hesitate to put you in the position of commenting on state politics, but the South Carolina Senate recently rebuked Governor McMaster over his declaration of the emergencies that have led to the shutdowns and things like that, and apparently that they were not executed appropriately, that after a certain point, he should have consulted the legislature to be able to extend those emergency declarations. I am curious, and again, I don't necessarily want you to comment on that specifically, but the restrictions that were based on those emergency declarations affected some people directly, but it seems like other businesses were voluntarily following their own guidelines or even more stringent shutdowns. How much of what Prisma, the restrictions that Prisma was operating under, were self-imposed, and how many were imposed by the state government?
Well, so you're right. That is a challenge. And I can only imagine what it must be like to fill the shoes of any governor at this point in making these decisions.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be Henry McMaster right now.
That's right. It is certainly a challenge, and I understand everyone is trying to do their best job to make the right decisions at the right time. And the way, again, this is Saria's interpretation,
sure,
but the way I would see those executive orders is that they are set as a minimum that people must follow, should follow, for the health of the public, for individuals and communities. And then organizations in many ways may have taken a step above that for precaution and safety. So I respect those added safety measures that have been put in place by some individuals. They may be spreading out even further than the 6 feet that's recommended and may go a step further with universal masking and providing surgical masks in places where they have the supplies. So I truly support our businesses and our health systems who are trying their best to keep everyone safe, and also support our government to make the right decisions with the information that we have. And honestly, for all of us, it's somewhat of an educated guessing game.
Sure.
To make the right decision. And we've got to continue to watch the data and see where it leads us in order to keep our citizens safe in South Carolina.
Well, specifically, I was curious about the restrictions that PRISMA experienced. For example, in the last episode, I spoke with Dr. Will Cobb, who is, if I remember correctly, is the chair of the surgery department. And he was talking about the deferred surgeries that that had been put off, that maybe can't be put off any longer. The conditions that they were intended to treat have worsened to the point that the surgery is now necessary rather than deferrable, and that those surgeries are continuing at PRISMA, but that they were deferred in the first place. I don't remember the governor ever saying hospitals couldn't do any particular type of surgery. That was something that PRISMA kind of decided, internally rather than externally. For our part, Entercom has, again, the governor never said that radio stations need to send people to work from home, but that's what we've done. The decisions came down from the corporate office that people who could work from home should. Broadcast people like myself and others that are still in the building are considered essential, and we can still come in, but it drastically reduced the number of people in the building. And again, the idea being to flatten that curve and to promote that sort of social distance.
Yes, yeah, so there was a strong request from Governor McMaster early on with COVID-19 and across the country, where there were recommendations, and in some states there was a requirement for those elective surgeries to be shut down. We were very mindful of that information and support that at the time it was safety first. Let's do what we need to do to keep people safe, to ensure that we have preventive measures that are in place so that people are as safe as possible. It has created a challenge for patients in our communities, individuals who have put off surgeries, who have been in pain, or perhaps it's been a worsening of their condition, or I think of individuals who may have vascular disease or limbs that may be not getting the circulation they need. There have been obviously emergency surgeries that have moved forward, and those elective surgeries that now we're referring to as deferred surgeries.
Right.
Because in most cases, if you have a surgery scheduled, it's probably not necessarily elective in the sense that you could get it if you want, or you don't get it if you don't want.
Right. And
you probably have a medical indication for it.
Right. And this, again, is something that we discussed with Dr. Cobb, that an elective surgery is basically just that the doctor and the patient have both elected to treat their particular complaint with surgery rather than a medicinal treatment or something else. And so
exactly. In
one sense, any surgery is elective. But that there is, he made the distinction between deferrable surgeries and, as you said, the emergency surgeries. If people will remember the example that I gave last week, if you come into the emergency room with a bone sticking out of your leg, that's not a deferrable surgery. We need to fix that right now. Like that's, we got to take care of that. But other things can be deferred for a period, but they may become more necessary after a certain period of time.
That's correct. And I'll give the example of colorectal cancer screening or colon cancer risk and performing colonoscopies. Now, there may be other methods or modalities for some patients that they can undergo, but for many individuals who have risk, that's a necessary procedure. And where we're going to see, no doubt, an impact is people with cancers that screenings have been put off for safety measures. And
or
why
even surgeries
so
have been put
important
off.
That's right. That's why it's so important to get back to those screening measures. Breast cancer screening, there have already been some early statistics that are being tossed around of the number of breast cancer cases we may have if people don't, or if they're not able to get those mammograms ordered, because we know the longer we delay care, the more likely that you will have the complications as you were referring to, Chris.
Right. I know that you keep up, Dr. Sicozio, with a lot of the research that's been going on regarding COVID-19. Have we determined yet whether people can be reinfected if they've already had and gotten over this infection, or if you have it once that you're effectively immune to it?
Yes, so that's an excellent question, and one we're not so sure about. We are beginning to see across the globe in areas, for example, like China and South Korea, where there are individuals who originally had COVID-19 as an illness, and subsequently many weeks or months later, they're now experiencing the same symptoms again. So the question is it a reinfection or is it a relapse of the condition? And those are answers we just don't have yet, but we are gathering data, and hopefully in the future we'll be able to determine exactly what the story is.
Well, and I gather the testing is critical in that regard, because some of the tests we've discussed on the program before test for antibodies, and some of them are actually testing for the virus inside the person. And I know that the accuracy of some of those tests has been called into question. I personally, one of my many tasks here at the radio station is to do business news for our news talk station. And just this week, I reported on a local, well, they have a plant here locally, but the company I think is based in Ohio, but they have developed an antibody test that is highly accurate, apparently, for the COVID-19 antibodies, and that's going to help with determining who has had or is reacting in an immune way to a current infection. Are we ever going to know how many people had this disease at any point?
Another great question from you. And I will share that Prisma Health also has the capability to run antibody testing. We have validated those tests. And so far, they're giving us information. However, it has not provided conclusive information.
Gotcha.
So what we do know is if you have a positive antibody test, it is likely that you have been exposed to COVID-19. What we still don't know is how many individuals across communities have been exposed and will have antibodies over time. That information will become available. And we're not quite sure what to do with the information yet. And again, this is across the world, trying to determine what does that number tell us? And at what level do perhaps you have immunity or you don't have immunity? And because there's variation in the test, it is difficult for people to understand and trust who they received this test from. We've seen numerous cases where these tests have been invalidated.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to make sure
or
that
even
you
counterfeit
are,
tests.
Exactly. There are many scams out there or unreliable tests. I've just saw some new information of a national company that their validity has been called into question. Mm. So you have to start with a company and an organization that you trust to get these results, but then also be wary if anyone tries to tell you that because you have antibodies that you are safe and protected from COVID-19.
Well, and speaking of the testing that Prisma does, I know that one thing that you've been doing along is the drive-through testing. Is that still available at Prisma Health?
Correct. We still have our drive-through testing available. And across South Carolina, we had begun testing widely in our communities. We have tailors set up for this weekend for people to walk up and receive testing. We've been to Berea. We've also been to several other areas in the community to serve those needs. So I think what's important is for our listeners to be listening to the news and hear where is that next community testing site popping up. We anticipate doing this certainly through June, and Governor McMaster has committed to test 2% of the South Carolina population, and we are in partnership with Governor McMaster, with DHEC, to ensure that we're offering these tests broadly and widely to our communities.
How long does it take for these tests to show results? I know early on the tests were, 48, 72, maybe even longer hours. Have we gotten that time frame down any?
So yes, it depends. When we have individuals who are coming into our emergency department because they're very sick and need that immediate care, we have testing capability that gives us results within several hours, up to 4 hours. And then with our testing sites, we're getting those results back within 24 to 48 hours.
Okay.
And it's so very important. I can't stress this enough, Chris. When people show up to be tested, it's so important for them to validate that we have appropriate and up-to-date contact information, because we give them a personal phone call with the results, whether the tests are negative, whether the test is positive, and having those accurate cell phone numbers or landlines or phone contact information is so critical so that we can stay connected to the community.
As always, you can visit prismahealth.org/coronavirus for more information on the coronavirus situation and how Prisma Health is addressing it. And of course, you can visit 1063WORD.com for more news about coronavirus from around the state that may not necessarily be health related, but is still related to the pandemic. Dr. Saria Sicosio, the Ambulatory Chief Medical Officer at Prisma Health, has been my guest today. Thank you very much again for being here, Doctor.
Thank you, Chris. As always, it's been a pleasure.
Well, it's been my pleasure as well. I'm Chris Evans, and this has been Focus on the Upstate.
You've been listening to Focus on the Upstate with Chris Evans. If you would like more information on today's topic, email Chris at cevans@intercom.com.